Shepherd versus State Automobile Mutual Insurance Company, et al. Mr. Siege.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is the case where my client had a confidential meeting with defendant's top executives to discuss his confidential analysis and plans with respect to his desired acquisition of the Meridian Insurance Companies. And the defendants then promptly took that information for themselves and acquired Meridian for themselves and forced my client to sell his 20% ownership block of Midgey to defendants for less than their fair value. We're here today because the district court committed prejudicial error in failing to consider all of the evidence that we designated in opposition to the defendant's summary judgment motion, and in failing to construe all reasonable inferences in favor of the plaintiffs, our clients, the non-movements on summary judgment. The district court's duty to construe all the evidence and all reasonable inferences thereon in favor of our clients is an issue of law subject to de novo review by this court. And we respectfully submit that when the court looks at the evidence that we timely designated, according to the appropriate standard of review of construing all the facts and reasonable inferences in our client's favor, this court will see that the district court's ruling should be reversed and that plaintiffs should be permitted to have their day in court and present this case to a jury.
Well, let me tell you what bothers me about the case. Given that both Mr. Shepherd and his expert conceded that they couldn't identify any other company that would have purchased Meridian for more than $30 a share, wouldn't a jury have to speculate to find causation and damages here?
No, Your Honor. There's ample evidence of the value of Midgey as being more than $30 per share, and that comes in two parts. The district court focused greatly on the lack of other offers of more than $30 per share. But it's very important to recognize it's undisputed that defendant CEO Bob Bailey told Norma Oman, Meridian CEO, that the reason he wanted the $25 million breakup fee for this transaction, which is unreasonable by the description from mid-market, was to keep other bidders from coming out of the woodwork. That was his intention for using a breakup fee that was 20% of the cash consideration in this transaction, which is far outside a normal range for breakup fees. In addition, Midgey's expert, A.G. Edwards, their investment bankers, were not permitted to solicit any other offers. And mid-market gave an expert opinion that says when you combine the fact that you had a punitive breakup fee and the fact that the target company's investment banker was not permitted to solicit any other offers, it virtually ensures that no competing offers will materialize. But, Your Honor, the jury won't need to speculate about value because there is ample evidence of value that the court didn't consider. We timely designated it. It is the defendant's own analysis, for example. We showed that the defendants prepared at least five written analyses of this transaction before the confidential meeting with Mr. Shepherd. Defendants' analyses show that they consistently anticipated paying $35 per share for Midgey, and that even with paying a $34 million dividend, which they ended up not paying in this case, they still would have acquired substantially more assets than the cost to acquire Meridian, paying $35 per share. Now, in their later analyses, they used some lower prices, $32, and some numbers below $30. But in every instance, at prices above $30 per share, and even assuming a $34 million payment by them of a dividend that they did not pay, they would still get more assets than they would spend at the purchase price at 30. There are other experts in this case used by the defendants that again show a value greater than the cost of acquiring Midgey at $30 per share. That's in the record. Midgey's investment banker, Philo Smith Capital Corporation, gave a valuation range for the transaction. The numbers are in the evidence. I believe it's $167 million to $205 million. The acquisition cost was $125 million to buy this company for $30 a share. So by Philo Smith's expert analysis, that produces a value of almost 50% more than the cost to buy Midgey at $30 per share. Midgey's own expert, A.G. Edwards, prepared a shareholders' rights plan in 1998. Now, it's true that was a projection of the 10-year expected price for Midgey stock. So it was not a target price for 2000. But A.G. Edwards' projection for Midgey stock price for 10 years was $75 per share. Another expert that Midgey retained, that State Auto retained, was Cochran Coronia and Company. State Auto retained Cochran Coronia to give opinions to the Ohio Department of Insurance for this transaction, and we don't have Cochran Coronia's opinions because after we filed this lawsuit, defendant's expert Cochran Coronia destroyed their work papers for this transaction. But we know that Cochran and Coronia didn't resist this transaction and tell State Auto that they were overpaying because we know that the Ohio Department of Insurance approved this transaction.
Even assuming there's a material dispute of fact on damages, how is that causally linked to the breach that's being claimed in this case, a breach of the confidentiality agreement? It seems to me there's a disconnect between those two.
Your Honor, the confidentiality agreement actually has two components. The first component made it a breach of the agreement for State Auto to trade in Midgey stock based on any information that Mr. Shepard provided to them in confidence. We submit that State Auto clearly used information that Mr. Shepard provided to them in confidence to trade in Midgey stock, and we've covered those issues in our brief, and we can cover those.
I thought all that was publicly available information.
It is not, Your Honor. The raw data, it is true that the raw numbers for these companies, because the companies are insurance companies and have to report, it is true that raw numbers, their raw numbers are publicly available. Mr. Shepard did not simply bring to that meeting publicly filed documents. He brought to that meeting and explained to defendants over a two-hour meeting his confidential analysis and plans and how he compiled those numbers to determine how the analysis or how the transaction would play out. One of the examples of the things that the defendants clearly used that Mr. Shepard provided to them was that one needed to consider the outstanding stock options and the fact that the option holders would likely exercise their stock options when someone came in and offered a price above $25 per share. That was not publicly available. The defendants had been pursuing a Meridian transaction for 9 years and never once in any of their analysis included consideration of the stock options. And we have shown undisputably that 3 days after the meeting with Mr. Shepard, based on his confidential Exhibit 1 that shows the impact of the stock options and the option proceeds, the defendants changed their analysis, and their analysis on October 5, 2000 shows for the very first time that they considered that the option holders would exercise their options and the way that would impact this transaction. We believe the evidence also shows that the defendants used other evidence or other information provided by Mr. Shepard. But, Your Honor, for your question on causation, under the confidentiality agreement, if the defendants traded in Midgey stock based on information that Mr. Shepard provided to them, then there's no question that caused the loss of his shares. Because once they teamed up with Meridian, the two of those companies had more than 50% control of the company. And Mr. Shepard, although he voted against this transaction, he lost his shares. They were taken from him, and he received the $30 per share. But he was forced to sell his shares over his objection. So there's no question that if the court agrees with us that a reasonable jury could conclude that the defendants traded in Midgey stock based on information that Mr. Shepard provided to them, then there's no question that that was the cause of the loss of his shares. The second prong is less clear, and that is, did the defendants' disclosures to Meridian of Mr. Shepard's confidential information cause the loss of his shares, meaning did the defendant's disclosures cause Meridian to reverse its position for 9 years? Defendants had pursued Meridian, and Meridian said, no, we don't want a transaction with you. Defendants met with my client and defendants' four top executives for 2 hours on October 2nd, 2000. And 4 days later, defendants' executives went and met with Meridian, and the evidence is undisputed that the very first thing that defendant's CEO Bob Bailey did when he walked into the room was told Meridian that he had just had confidential discussions with Greg Shepard regarding Meridian, that Mr. Shepard expected to be paid more for his shares, which we submit is clearly a reference to the stock option that he had proposed to the defendants. And that very day, after Meridian had rejected 9 years of offers from Meridian agreed to all the principal terms of this transaction. We submit a reasonable jury could conclude from that and the voluminous other evidence we've designated that Meridian agreed to the transaction that day with defendants because defendants persuaded Meridian that Mr. Shepard was out with Eric Fogel, who was the M&A lawyer on a much larger transaction that defendants were very familiar with, the Nationwide Allied transaction, which was 10 times larger than this and was an acquisition by defendants' Columbus, Ohio neighbor, and that we believe the evidence could lead a jury to reasonably conclude that defendants persuaded Meridian that Shepard and Fogel, by offering the option to other insurance companies, would secure control of Meridian. So if Meridian entered into the transaction, and that's a question of fact for the jury, did Meridian enter into the transaction based in part on the disclosures that defendants undeniably made to Meridian about Shepard's plans? And there was no authority for defendants to make those disclosures under the agreement. We submit there are clear issues of fact on that part of causation, but on the first part, trading in stock, defendants trading in Midgey stock clearly was the cause of Mr. Shepard losing his shares. We submit that the district court erred, and based on the direct evidence that we've designated, as well as the circumstantial evidence, one other comment is, it's very important in this case that the court consider the circumstantial evidence because, unlike other cases, the only parties who were present in that in the room during that October 6, 2000 meeting were defendants and Meridian. Defendants succeeded in acquiring Meridian, and Meridian is now part of defendants. So in a case like this, we will never have a statement from Meridian that says, yes, the reason we agreed to the transaction with State Auto is because State Auto convinced us that Greg Shepard was going with Nationwide's lawyer Eric Fogel and looking for a joint venture partner to sell his 20% block and do a transaction. Meridian will not admit that, and State Auto, of course, will not admit that. But the circumstantial evidence is very, very strong, and that's designated in our brief. We respectfully ask the court, when the court look at this evidence according to the correct standard of review, construing the evidence and all reasonable inferences thereon in the plaintiff's favor, that the court reverse the grant of summary judgment and allow this case to proceed to trial by jury. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Siege. Mr. Parcell.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Stuart Parcell, counsel for Appley State Automobile Mutual Insurance Company, arguing on behalf of both sides, as well as its subsidiary, State Auto Financial Corporation. This case should be decided on the undisputed material facts, not irrelevant facts, not wild speculation that plaintiffs ask this court to go down, or implausible inferences that they suggest. Here, the undisputed material facts compel the very conclusion that the district court reached. No breach, no causation, no damages. The trial court properly found that plaintiffs have failed to establish evidence or present evidence establishing any of those three essential elements of their breach of contract claim. Based on Shepard's own deposition testimony and the plain language of the confidentiality agreement. And in doing so, the district court, as to breach, expressly stated it was viewing the evidence in a light reasonably most favorable to the plaintiffs and concluded that Mr. Shepard's information was not protected nor used by State Auto in its acquisition of Meiji.
Well, certainly his discussions centered around information that was in the public domain, public information. But what about counsel's argument that he compiled it, he put it together, he organized it in such a way that it should be protected?
Well, Your Honor, that still does not address the express exceptions that are set forth in the confidentiality letter. Paragraph 3 expressly states that the restrictions in the letter do not apply, and then there's a list of 6 or 7 items there where it is expressly not protected under the agreement. So when the trial court concluded that it was not protected, and we're going to go through these item by item, at least the ones that they've emphasized here, they clearly were not protected because they were either in the public domain or Mr. Shepard had publicly disclosed them previously. But I wanted to first address a couple of points that Mr. Seach just now made. He's referred a number of times in his brief to some things that we just didn't think were worthy of a response, and I didn't want our silence on those subject matters to be considered to be a weakness. The Cochran Coronia, destruction of documents, for instance, they were not even retained in this case by State Auto until long after they even realized this case was pending. They were the Ohio Department of Insurance's experts in the previous acquisition, although State Auto was required to pay for them. Secondly, the reference to Eric Fogel as an attorney, as somehow, I'm not even sure I understand the connection, but whatever they're suggesting, it's baseless. Number one, there's no evidence that State Auto ever disclosed that Eric Fogel, Mr. Shepard's attorney, attended that meeting on October the 2nd. It's not there. But secondly, it doesn't matter anyway. Mr. Fogel was counsel for Nationwide in their prior tender offer in 1998. Those tender offer materials, and there's 14 filings, public filings, show Mr. Fogel was Nationwide's attorney. In addition, Shepard's own public tender offer materials, long before his meeting with State Auto, publicly showed that Mr. Fogel was Mr. Shepard's attorney as well. So everybody already knew, and it was public knowledge, that Mr. Fogel was counsel both for Nationwide and Shepard. There was nothing new about that. Another preliminary matter I'd like to cover before I get to each of these essential elements that they failed to establish relates to an overall theme of his damages in this case. And I think there's some clarification that's needed to clear up any confusion that may have been caused. Because if you look at the brief, there's two sleights of hand that's going on here. And again, during Mr. Seach's argument, they repeatedly refer, by the way, Mr. Shepard's case is all about what was the value of Meiji's shares. Meiji is Meridian Insurance Group, Inc. Meiji was a subsidiary of Meridian Mutual Insurance Company. Mr. Shepard was not a shareholder of the mutual company. In fact, only policyholders own the mutual company. So they're referring to the value of the entire group of Meridian companies. And then in the same breath, they refer over here to equating that with the value of Meiji shares. And they're two different things. Yes, the value of the overall group included Meiji valuation, but it was more than that. Meridian Mutual had its own lines of business. It had over a $45 million surplus. It was a key component of this merger whereby State Auto Mutual and Meridian Mutual merged, and then the surviving entity cashed out the Meiji shares. So that's the first sleight of hand you need to pay particular attention to in their briefs. The second one is, well, once Mr. Shepard has the value of all the Meridian companies, and not just Meiji, he then divides that in order to determine Meiji share value, not by all of Meiji shares. He divides it by roughly one-half of Meiji shares. Okay? So if you have a company, for instance, that's worth $100 and there's 10 shareholders each owning one share, it's easy. That one's easy. It's $10 a share. But instead of dividing by 10, Mr. Shepard's dividing by 5, which in effect doubles the value of Meiji. So he's got both of these things going on. When you refer to State Auto's own internal analyses, you look at that. It's a valuation of the entire Meridian companies, not Meiji itself. Same with Philo Smith. They've expressly valued the entire Meridian group, not Meiji itself. So I just wanted the court to be aware of that. He refers to all this evidence about more than $30 a share for Meiji. It's not the case. It's not there. Now let me turn to the three essential elements that Mr. Shepard failed to present evidence of. First one is no breach. There's two components to that element. One is Mr. Shepard had to establish or had to present evidence that the information was protected under the confidentiality letter. The district court properly concluded, quote, the information either was inaccurate and thus valueless or was covered by exceptions set forth in the confidentiality agreement. That's at page 20 of the district court decision. The second component of the breach is he has to prove that State Auto either disclosed Shepard's information or traded in Meiji stock as a result of that information. And here, Mr. Shepard failed to establish either of those two components of the breach element. I'm going to refer to the items of information that they focused on. One is his valuation of, again, the Meridian companies, not Meiji itself. Shepard admitted at his deposition, and he concedes again in his briefs, that his valuation was just plain wrong. We don't know if he did it intentionally when he showed up to State Auto. It doesn't matter. That's immaterial for now. The key undisputed fact is that it was inaccurate. It was on his Exhibit 1 as well as his Exhibit 3. It overvalued the Meridian group of companies by $114 million, which was one-third of the value of the group that he had on those documents. And State Auto caught it during the meeting, and Shepard readily admitted it and apologized for it during the meeting. If you look and you take out that $114 million for the MIG total for equity in that Exhibit 1, it reduces the $37.95 per share number to $24.25. But again, that's still for the entire Meridian group, not just Meiji. Misinformation, and the law is clear on this, misinformation is not protectable. It's useless. It has no value. In one of the cases we cited, Monolith, plaintiff has the burden of establishing the information it claims to have confided is not misinformation, but on the contrary, it is factual, truthful, and useful. In addition to that, the court found there was no evidence that State Auto either used or disclosed any of that valuation analysis anyway. There's no evidence in the record. There was a couple other pieces of misinformation that Mr. Shepard shared with State Auto that day. And he tries to pick and choose what he contends that State Auto relied upon or used or disclosed. But I don't know how you separate it out. I mean, it's undisputed he'd left State Auto with a misimpression with what he was going to do that day and what he could do. One of those key items is he disclosed he intended to continue to bid for Meiji. As I'm sure you're well aware, he had a pending public tender offer. He had tried. He'd offered $20 a share. He was declined. He'd offered $25 a share. He was declined again. He went in and told State Auto he'd continue to bid, but he could bid no more than $27 a share. He admitted a deposition, and he admits again in his reply brief that wasn't true. He had the resources to go above $27 a share. We've searched long and hard. We couldn't come up with a case where a person suing somebody else for using false information. I mean, I've never seen a case quite like this, where he is turning around after falsely leaving them a false impression and then suing them because he contends that they used that misinformation. The district court expressly found that he was deceptive, and that was based upon his own deposition testimony, that he wasn't totally candid with State Auto when he told him how high he could bid. The district court, as to his intent to continue to bid and the fact that it would lead to more bidders, that's part of their causation analysis in the breakup fee. District court properly found he had also publicly disclosed his intention to continue to bid on two separate occasions. And if you look at their brief, they actually concede at page 19 of their reply brief that Shepard publicly stated that plaintiffs intended to continue to bid for Meiji. So there's no dispute over this. That was covered under the express exceptions to the confidentiality letter in paragraph 3, subdivision F. If you publicly disclose it, the restrictions under this letter don't apply.
Wasn't there also undisputed evidence that the Meiji board had made it publicly clear that it did not want to deal with the plaintiff?
Yes, Your Honor, and that also goes to this causation issue. The Meiji public board met on October the 4th, and things were not going well for them. And they expressly instructed management to explore strategic alternatives. The next day, they did issue a public press release saying they were for sale by using the strategic alternatives language, and expressly stated in there, and I believe this is amended complaint paragraph 70, that they were not interested in doing a deal with Mr. Shepherd, especially in view of his past problems in the insurance industry. He had ran a company in 3 years into insolvency, and that was public, and that was part of the Meegee's rationale for not wanting to do a deal with Mr. Shepherd whatsoever. Last thing I'd like to touch on is the breakup fee. You mentioned, well, they admit they can't identify anybody who would pay more than $30 a share, and we agree that that is devastating to their damage element. They came back and said, well, yeah, we had the breakup fee. This breakup fee was too high, and therefore you prevented others from bidding higher than $30 a share. Well, the breakup fee itself, if you look at it, didn't come into place until October 25 when the merger agreement was reached. They were in play for 2 months before that, and the district court found Meegee's own tender offer. This was not a big coincidence. Their own tender offer put Meegee in play. For 2 months, the best offer by far that Meridian received was $30 a share from State Auto. They received another one from somebody else besides Shepherd's. The highest he got was $25. But two other offers they received, one was between $15 and $20 a share. The other one was $15 a share. And that comes from Meegee's CFO deposition testimony that we have in the record. His name was Steve Hazelbaker. So for 2 months they're in play, they don't get an offer anywhere near $30. That's the key evidence. Mr. Shepherd's own damages expert admitted, and we quote this in our briefs, that it was extremely unlikely that anybody would pay more than $30 a share. And in order to get above that number, you'd have to assume that they would make significant improvements in their financial performance. That's Shepherd's own damages expert. So, but this whole breakup fee theory on causation, if you look at their briefs, is derived from this intent to continue to bid, but no more than $27, which they said would lead to more bidders. That information was false. He left them with a false impression. That information that supposedly resulted in the breakup fee itself was not protected because it was untrue, and the district court properly found that. I'd also like to touch one piece on the Meegee options that Mr. Seach referenced on back on the breach issue. The options information was public information, as the district court properly found. Mr. Seach refers to State Auto's internal analysis. It does give the Meegee options outstanding information. Those three numbers that you see there for Meegee options were in Shepherd's public tender offer materials about a month before that. The very exact same numbers. So, again, under the express provisions, and I believe it was, again, 3F, the restrictions in the letter don't apply if the information is disclosed by the company, that's Mr. Shepherd's company, to others on an unrestricted or non-confidential basis. In sum, there was no breach, no causation, no damages. We would ask that this panel affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of State Auto. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Presto. Mr. Seach.
Thank you, Your Honors. The arguments by defendants' counsel are really appropriate for closing argument. They are taking the evidence in this case and construing it in defendants' favor. Defendants, for example, say that Shepherd's analysis was flat wrong. He had a double counting error in his analysis. Nowhere did defendants acknowledge that in their analysis, William Hansen, the person that they relied on to perform their analysis, made exactly the same double counting error. The double counting error was when you look at the combined value of Meegee and Meridian Mutual Insurance Company, the value of Meegee includes all of Meegee's net worth. So when you combine them, you should not also add the value of the Meegee stock held by Meridian Mutual. Otherwise, you would be double counting that stock. This is crucial.
How does it affect Meegee's stock but not Meridian's? The double counting.
How does it affect? I'm not sure if I understand, Your Honor.
Well, isn't that the claim, that the double counting?
Defendant's counsel is saying that because there was a double counting in Mr. Shepard's analysis, it created an overvaluation of the combined value of the two companies.
Right.
That's their position. And the evidence shows, and we have designated, that defendants made exactly the same double counting error when they did their analysis in 1999. William Hansen made that error. The defendants, in reviewing that analysis, the defendant's CEO, CFO, Steve Johnston, picked up on it in 1999 and said, look, if you combine these two companies, don't you, since in looking at the value of Midgey, you're counting all of its net worth, when you look at Meridian Mutual, if you count the value of the Midgey shares it owns, don't you end up double counting those shares? And they realized that was right, that you can't count, when you should count all of the equity value of the Midgey shares, but not additionally the portion held by Meridian Mutual. So the defendants had made exactly the same error in their 1999 analysis. They refused to acknowledge it. Steve Johnston, when we deposed him, testified that did not undermine his reliance on Bill Hansen's ability to perform an analysis, and they continued to rely on Hansen to perform their analysis. They recognized the double counting error, they adjusted it out, and they relied on Hansen's analysis. That's the error in Shepard's analysis. State Auto immediately recognized it, but still, after it was backed out, it reduced the combined value from $317 million to $200 to $203 million, which is still far in excess of the $125 million acquisition cost in this case to buy Midgey for $30 per share. So the defendants are simply taking an error by Shepard and saying that should bar his claim. They refuse to acknowledge they made the same error. One question we hope that the court considers in this case: if Shepard's analysis was wrong and useless, why, only 3 days after meeting with Shepard, did defendants take his determination, not just a public printout of what stock options was, why did they take his determination that the option holders would exercise their options and immediately include it in their written analysis? Why did they meet with defendants' principals only 4 days after October 2nd? And in the undisputed evidence in this case, the very first thing defendant's CEO said when he walked into the room is that Greg Shepard was at our offices on October 2nd, 2000. We had confidential discussions with him about his plans for Meridian. He expects to be paid more for his shares, and he knows all the terms we are offering you. If that was not an effort by defendants to use the information Mr. Shepard provided them to persuade Meridian to change 9 years of rejecting their offers, why did defendants bother to say that? What the defendants want this court to believe is that it's just idle chit-chat, that defendant CEO just told Meridian CEO just to pass the time, and it had no impact on this transaction. We submit it's clear it had an impact on this transaction. It is one incredible coincidence with 9 years of rejected offers. They want this court to believe in an incredible coincidence. The window of time just happened to open when they would agree to a transaction with State Auto 4 days after Mr. Shepard met with their top executives for 2 hours with Fogle, who had orchestrated a much bigger transaction.
Seach, I'm going to have to ask you to conclude.
Okay.
Well, you can conclude your thought, but I'm
sorry. Thank you, Your Honor. We submit that when the court looks at the evidence and construes the inferences in the plaintiff's favor, the court would have to conclude that the defendant's use of the stock options analysis was just surplusage. If it was public, why hadn't defendants, in 9 years of looking at this transaction, ever considered that the option holders would exercise? And why would they have gone in 4 days after the confidential meeting, and the very first thing they did when they walked in the room was tell what happened on October 2nd and how Mr. Shepard had proposed this option to sell his shares to them? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Seach. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement. The court will proceed to the